Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. I thought this would be a good bumper to play to talk about Mike Etor, because the other day I told him that on the cover of the book is a picture of him. I said, you know, you've gotten more handsome over the year. So joining me, so little man, maybe that will help his ego a little bit with this, but joining me is a guy who's been on the program, I don't know how many times, a ton of times, and I never get tired of talking leadership. I never have gotten tired of talking leadership with Mike. He's one of the great guys that I've ever crossed paths with in the Marine Corps. So, Mike, welcome back to All Marine Radio, and congratulations on the book entitled Trust-Based Leadership, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. So welcome back.
Thank you, Mac. It's a pleasure to be back, and I appreciate the invite.
No. So is it true that you have gotten better looking over the years, or is that just me? Is that just my bad memory, thinking that you used to be uglier?
You know, it's kind of like the older you get, like I figure if I can stick around long enough, eventually I'm going to be ready to win a bodybuilding contest, you know, in the 86 and over division. So, and it's not because I'll be looking that good, because there just won't be that much competition. So it's the same with facial looks, you know, at my age right now, you know, you hit that, that kind of terminal velocity of ugliness. So I'm where I'm at, and I say I'm looking good, and that's all that matters, Matt.
Wow. Now, how did you come up with your? It's your picture on the cover, right? And I have a tie like that. I'm very happy. It means I have fairly decent taste in ties. How did this idea of like, okay, we're gonna write a book, Mike? We need your picture on the cover. What was your initial? Was that like, yeah? No kidding. We need my picture on the cover. Or did you say, you know, there's got to be better options in my mug on this book? Tell me about the cover. How did you decide on your good-looking mug to be the cover?
Yeah, well, there's you're very observant, and there's some method behind the madness here. The primary use of this book is as a textbook and course material for my coaching and training programs and live seminars. That's the first and foremost intent of it. So it is, as you can see, it's a hefty book, 574 pages. It is, in fact, for all intents and purposes, a textbook. So there's the first purpose. The second purpose of it is to serve as a marketing tool, a piece of marketing material. I'm going to send this book unsolicited to selected in executives and companies, you know, senior execs, VPs, HR people, founders, CEOs, whatever. You get the picture.
Right.
And, you know, having been a senior executive in business, you get deluged, Mac, with junk mail every day. Your executive assistant comes in, like, here's today's mail, and there may be literally 40 pieces of mail, and 35 of them are unsolicited. Hey, we'll sell you computers. We'll sell you this. Hey, who's doing this service for you? And most of it immediately just goes in the can. You don't even open most of it. But every now and then, I would get a box that had a book in it, and whether the person sending the book wrote it, or it was a software company sending a book written by Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or something, I wouldn't throw the book away. I would always open that package up. So I obviously am in the business of, you know, teaching and coaching leadership at the executive level is where I've been focusing. And now that you've got the book in your hands, picture yourself as an executive. You're tired of junk mail. You open up a box. This book is in there. Well, the first thing you get hit is that ugly face right there. So there's obviously, there's a guy there right next to my face that says, right away, within 3 seconds, you know what my name is, and I'm a retired Marine. See the company name over it. So obviously, name, retired Marine. Okay, the guy's teaching leadership. You go down to the title of the book, the title, Trust-Based Leadership, the subtitle, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. I say if you've read that cover in 5 seconds, you know exactly what you're holding in your hands. Now, flip it over. If I can get them to turn it over, it's got a little bit of a biography. It takes about 15 seconds for them to read. Then it's got a couple of my quotes there. And I say the combination of the front and the back covers, if that can cause them to pick the book up and heft it and just thumb through it real quick and fan it, worst case scenario, okay, this guy appears to know what he's talking about. This is a real book. It's still going in the shit can. Best case, it's like, okay, pretty interesting. We actually do have some leadership issues here. I'm going to read it later, or I'm going to pass the book off to my VP of HR or whomever and tell her to take a peek at it, and let's see if this guy seems credible. If that can happen, then they go on my social media, my LinkedIn. They say, okay, he's got a website. I mean, the guy obviously is experienced. He does this kind of stuff. So that's the method to the madness behind me being on the cover, very carefully crafted text placement of things on the front and back cover site. Little marketing tutorial for you, Mac.
You know what? I'm impressed. I thought you were like big on leadership. I did not realize that you were like a savant relative to marketing. I'm impressed. I will tell you this. I've been gone speaking for the better part of the last 3 weeks, and I got home on Saturday. And I was up in Las Vegas. I had come home. I was home about a day, and then I went up to Las Vegas to speak at a birthday ball, and that was just an awesome experience. And then I went and I did my post-traumatic winning thing for training leaders from the Las Vegas Fire Department, Clark County Fire Department, as they're known. And I came home and I drove home on Saturday, and on my front porch was the box, and I opened it, and when I grabbed the book, I was surprised, honestly, at the size of the book. Right? It's a big, as you said, 500 and how many pages?
574.
Yeah, I mean I was like, holy shit, man! I didn't realize Etor knew this much, but he knows a lot. So talk about, first of all, before we go any further, but that surprised me. But before we go any further, how do people get their hands on this book?
Right now it's only for sale on Amazon.
Okay.
I think at some point I'll put it on other platforms. And Amazon's got a program back that I've opted into. Eventually, other booksellers and like private bookstores will eventually be able to buy my book and sell it through their store. That's probably going to take a few months. Right now, Amazon is it for print, softcover, and Kindle.
Got it. All right. So, Trust-Based Leadership, Mike Etor. If you do a search on that, you'll find a link to Amazon. Or if you go on your Amazon account and take a look at and pump that in there, it'll come right up. Let's talk about the book. I mean, you've been coaching leadership for a long time. I've had you on, this program, talk about leadership topics, from discipline to a variety of topics. Tell us about this book. Who is this book aimed at, and what is the thrust of this book?
Good questions. I'm going to use this book to teach clients. I also want people to buy it and read it. I'm only half joking when I say that I really think it's one of the best leadership books out there because it's so robust. And I think anyone with leadership experience if they will just look at the table of contents, they will say, not only is this good stuff, logically sequenced, progression and all that, I can use this book as the framework for a leadership development program in my own company that I'm going to run. So my theory or my assertion, Mac, is you or any other Marine, moderately decent, experienced NCO, staff NCO officer, you get out after one tour and you were a corporal, a lieutenant, whatever, staff sergeant, you got out after a couple of enlistments, you know enough leadership to take this book and make a program out of it. You could easily make PowerPoints out of some of the chapters and all of that. Right. And so, because that's what I do. I've got presentations made up. I did it in reverse. I made the presentations first and then realized I need to write the book so I can have students and attendees of seminars to read specific chapters before the actual live event or an individual coaching meeting.
That's what I've done as well.
Yeah.
Somebody said, have you written a book? And I said, it's not down on paper yet, but the book's already written. This is the book, right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so the questions I've been getting from clients and seminar attendees and all that, I go into companies and hold the 1, 2, and 3-day seminars for their leadership teams, and I realized that we would be more effective if I could have them read some of this before, during, and after. Because some things they just need to read, and they got it. I don't need to talk about it. I just need to refer to it or allude to it during the seminar. Other things we need to read and talk about actually in depth for an hour or two at the seminar. So that's where the book came from. As far as what level of leadership it's for.
Okay, hold on. Let me just interrupt here. When you say your seminars, can you just articulate for everybody your seminar work that you do? How often do you do it? Where do you do it? And if somebody says, well, hell, I'd love to. Geez, that really sounds interesting. My company could use that. I could use that. How do people find your seminars and get enrolled in them?
My website is fidelisleadership.com. And there's contact information there. I do two kinds of events, Mac. One is a public event where anybody can buy a ticket and come to it. And the other is when Acme Corporation, ABC Company, you get the point, hires me and I go in and now I'm talking and teaching in their office or in a hotel ballroom to their 8 or 38 leader member leadership team. I did not hold a public event in 2019 because, quite frankly, the book was dominating my life. I had to, really crank on this book. It was a beast to get done. Mm-hmm. Probably going to hold one or two public events in 2019. And I've already gotten, a good schedule slated for the first half of the year as far as private companies, private events where other people outside that company cannot attend that. So going to the website and contacting me is always the surest bet to reach me or my assistant. I've got an ops person named Nancy Broding, who was a Marine, was a student at TBS when I was there.
Nice.
And her husband lived close to me, and she's a good friend of mine. She helped me a lot with the book, actually. So you send an email, you're either going to get her or me live. If you get her, she's going to send it right over to me. And I answer all the emails within a day of getting them. So that's how people can get me.
All right. You were going to talk about who this is aimed at.
Yep. So from a Marine Corps perspective, this is the book that we needed. I needed this when I was a brand new corporal. And we both needed this as brand new lieutenants. When we were captains, we wanted to hand this book to our NCOs, staff NCOs, and officers. You get the picture.
Right.
It's Marine leadership concepts aimed at the business world, but it's still, I'll be honest with you, I've already had a couple of active duty Marines tell me that they feel it's better than anything that's in NCO school or staff academy right now. That, if you take out the business analogies, it's still really good, rock-solid Marine Corps leadership stuff. So I'll take that compliment. So I think it can help Marines. It can definitely help Marines and former military vets get a program together in their company. This is the kind of stuff. I'm paraphrasing. He said, actually, he's a former Marine lieutenant, TDS classmate of mine, PhD, school superintendent, has taken over a very troubled school district. And I sent him the book, and he said, my God, I've been holding leadership classes with my staff, administrators, teachers, and this is what I'm trying to get across. Now I have something to give them so they see the structure. He said, but all this stuff he listed, this is what I'm trying to teach them. Teacher, scholar, special trust and confidence, accountability, you know, the S and BAMS, just all that stuff. So it really, I think, can be used by leaders at every level in any type of organization. I specifically wrote it, Mac, for business leaders, because as you know, I had no business experience. I came out of the Marine Corps in 1998, joined K Force in 99 as a director, and within a few years I was a C-level officer in charge of vast majority of the non-sales functions of the company. So I knew very little about business. I knew even less about the departments in that business that I was in charge of. The only thing that saved me was I was an experienced leader, and I knew leadership cold. I had to adapt it, but for the skeptics out there, I did not have to adapt Marine Corps leadership as much as you might think. I maybe had to put a 10% spin on it, but people are people and leadership is leadership. And that's the message that I gave everybody at K-Force. I think there's a lot of people there that are believers now. They've moved on to other companies. They realize this stuff really works. And that's what I'm trying to get. I'm trying to get, you know, there was a lot of people out there that admire the military in general and the Marine Corps specifically for leadership. And so this is for the person out there that, first of all, wants to learn. Second, realizes, you know, a lot of this is good common sense. And third, I can use this book. I can buy a copy for my leaders, and we can have weekly discussions on it. We can start creating a culture and really replicate a lot of the Marine Corps leadership concepts. So I know I've said a mouthful there, but it's really, it'll serve several purposes for several different audiences. I truly wish I had this book when I started in the business world, because it would have made it a lot easier as I was trying to teach and mentor my civilian leaders about what I was trying to get across. I've now given this book to some of them 20 years later, and they said, well, great book. We've heard most of it before. We're doing it ourselves now. Boy, this would have been great if you could have handed it to us in 1999 and 2001 and all that. It would have greatly accelerated our comprehension and understanding of what you were talking about. Because it's laid, you know, you're an experienced leadership guy, Mac, and anyone that's listening to me right now, if they can, you know, I sent you a screenshot of the table of content. I mean, it's pretty well laid out. I mean, you're an experienced guy. You look at it, you can see that I'm doing the crawl, walk, run method of leadership here, specifically Marine Corps leadership, and then, you know, learning, leaning into the business world and all of that.
Well, I want to ask you about that, Mike, because, you know, I have the table of contents here in front of me. And, I mean, the scope of it is enormous. How did you – so we're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about trust-based leadership. How the hell did you – when you looked at the subject, how did you limit that? I'm intellectually curious about that because, you know, leadership is a gigantic subject, and you've written a 500 – how many pages? I'm at 561, and I'm looking at footnotes. So you've written – it's huge. And you're right. I'm sitting here, as you were talking, I'm sitting here thinking, we don't have a book like this, right? All the legacy that is Marine Corps leadership, there isn't a Marine Corps book that I know of on leadership, right? We have, a, I mean, and when you, so when you listen to this, right, section one, Marine Corps leadership, and there's an introduction. And then there's the next section is culture, concepts, and philosophies. Now, in that section, just listen to this. This is how broad, and this is just one. This is page 33 to 105. Leadership is a choice. Character, accountability, leadership by example, servant leadership, self-leadership, zero tolerance, the core values, standards and discipline, the Marine mindset, every Marine rifleman, special trust and confidence, teacher-scholar 360, speaking the truth to power, tribal knowledge, defenders of the culture, leaders eat last. 17 different chapters in the section culture, concepts, and philosophies. Now, that covers about 70 pages. So you can see that, you know, the scope of the subject is huge. How did you limit it? How did you set a left and right lateral limit? Did you broaden the lens and say, okay, I'm going to look at what Marine Corps leadership is, and then from there, once I get that thing scoped, then I'm going to begin to look at how I can treat this. How'd you limit it?
Yeah, good question. The goal of the first two sections is to really acquaint a stranger with the culture, concepts, and philosophies associated with Marine Corps leadership. So I'm telling everybody Marine Corps leadership fundamentals work in the business world. You and I know that, and we don't have to read it, Mac, but for the civilian, the untutored person in Marine Corps culture, concepts, philosophies, techniques, fundamentals, I felt it important to teach them, just as you got to teach a brand new corporal or lieutenant. You know, they come in, they're commissioned, they know it, but they haven't had classes yet on special trust and confidence and things like that. And so I just necked it down, and that was very difficult when you're comfortable like us and you're conversant. Some would say at an advanced level of leadership mastery, to put yourself in the position to remember, wait a minute, no, Mike, you know this. Experienced people know this. The newbie doesn't know this. You know, when you were a young guy just picking up two stripes, you did not know this stuff. And you either heard it or you read it somewhere or somebody taught it to you. So that's what I want to do. It's a real building block approach. If you look at chapter 15, the title is Tribal Knowledge.
Yes.
It's a very short chapter, maybe two pages. And this is where I cover in there that, unfortunately, the good news is the Marine Corps has got a great leadership program, rich history of leadership. The bad news is a lot of it is not written down. It's passed as tribal elders to the juniors. And it's been very effective. The problem is when it doesn't get passed down, then it breaks down. And the Marine Corps has gotten away with it for a long, long time. And so in this book, I have admittedly taken some of the tribal knowledge, the unwritten knowledge, that I'm not claiming I have invented. You know it. Legions of Marines know it. But I dare you to find me it written down anywhere.
No, you know, Mike, what's really interesting is what I do, right? I have this thing that I've developed called post-traumatic winning. And what I tell people is, look, I didn't make this up, right? I've interviewed Marines for now almost 4 years, almost 4 years. And I've heard different variations of the same story every time we talk about after the Battle of Khe Sanh, when you came home, what happened, right? After you fought in Ramadi, after you fought at the Chosin Reservoir, what happened? And it's a different variation on the same theme. Now, the way it came to me was my gunny walked up after a helicopter crash in 29 Palms, the pilot decapitated, co-pilot crushed to death, trying to save the two guys in the back, the two Marines in the back, a sergeant and a corporal, and everybody died. And he walked up to me, and he told me I'd never get over that. And after I cussed at him and said, get away from me, he looked at me and he said, no, you need to know that. I said, who taught you that? And he said, Vietnam guys, and it's good advice. Man, Mike, I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, if you've ever met Vietnam guys, I mean, they're not the brightest bulbs in the chandelier, right? So, I mean, where did they get this stuff, right?
Yeah.
The guys from World War II in Korea. Long before there was ever a diagnosis of PTSD, Marines were helping Marines. And I dare say the majority of this advice comes from the enlisted side of the Marine Corps, and it comes from the rank of, I'd say, gunnery sergeant and below. And I found this very interesting. Because officers and senior staff and COs, they fake like they're okay. And they don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? But junior Marines will. But very much like what you did, right? This is the oral tradition. And that's why I love it so much, that it's come from our culture, right? That I'm just amplifying it. I'm going to tell you the truth, and if you don't like it, I don't give a shit. But this is the truth that I've learned from the great, great Marines. And I would tell you this. It's not Marine Corps truth, right? It's not in the vault at headquarters Marine Corps. This is the truth of Marines, the spoken truth of Marines, which, as you said, which I don't know anybody has ever collected and tried to distill. But again, that is so strong. And again, very broad. But our leadership tradition in the Marine Corps is, oh, my God, it's ginormous, man. No wonder this thing is 590 pages long.
Yeah, and I've got more, and I had to cut it off at some point, as you would have. But I'll be really curious to hear your opinion when you get through it all, Mac. You just said it very eloquently. I mean, I've not invented anything in this book. I've coined several terms.
Give me one.
For instance, chapter 18, the five laws of leadership. Okay? When, I don't know if you have your book there, but when you go to them, I am the one that is, and I'm air quoting this, I am the one that's officially declaring that the Marine Corps has five laws of leadership. Now, people are going to say, well, who the hell are you to say that? And my response is, hang on, just read them. So I'm going to read them back. Five laws of leadership. I say, Mike Etor says, these are the five laws of Marine Corps leadership. Number one, leaders are responsible for everything that does or does not happen within their organizations. Number two, leaders can delegate authority, but they cannot delegate responsibility. Number three, the members of an organization will replicate the character, values, and behavior demonstrated by their leaders. Number four, leaders must be consistent in leadership style, personality, mood, behavior, interpersonal skills, and decision making. Number five, leaders should never give an order they are unwilling or unable to enforce. Now, I know every single Marine is out there saying, no kidding, Mike. You've heard them all before,
right. But
I don't know of any place where they are listed in sequence like that. And I determined that what I just said, those five laws were so important that they needed to be codified as laws and put in front of the next chapter, which I described as the three main responsibilities of a leader. Then the next chapter is the five pillars of leadership. Then we get into the good old-fashioned leadership traits and principles. So you can see the method of the Navis. In this case, the five laws are nothing that I invented, but passed by word of mouth, somebody might have only given one, three, and five to somebody. It's just good gouge from the gunny. It's good gouge from the instructor at TBS.
Right.
So I just threw a noose around them and corralled them and said, five laws of leadership. Now, the Marine Corps can say, well, we don't agree with you. Well, it's my book, and it's staying in there. That's what Mike Etor says, you know.
Yeah. Well, what happens if they say, okay, Etor, you punk, pull the Eagle Globe and anchors out? Then what?
Say again?
What happens if they make you pull the Eagle Globe and anchor out, though? Don't they have to sign off on that? You just can't hijack that, right?
If they want me to take, if they say, Mike, we don't agree with those five laws or anything else, and we want you to take the chapter headings up as a little Eagle Globe and anchor at the head of every chapter, then I'll take it out.
Okay. I don't think they will.
It's a very pro-Marine.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a little. No, Mike. Let me just tell you. One of the things I talk about in post-traumatic winning is, you know, you heard these things, right? These 10, I call them 10 commandments. They're just straight truth that comes from Marines, right? And I said, but how do young people see them, right? How does this apply to you, right? And I talk about adversity. And I said, do young people see adversity as an opportunity? If you're a leader, when it goes wrong, is the first thing that goes through your head is like, McNamara, boom, this was made for you, let's do it. Or do you think, oh, my God, what's happening, right? And I said, so, but our legacy is this. When something goes wrong, who do you want to be with? You want to be with the United States Marines because they get, in the midst of all of this, right, is when they're at their zenith. And so I just find that the scope of it just not daunting. So let me ask you about the scope of this and the work behind it. How long have you been working on it?
On and off for 4 years. I had to take a break. A couple years ago, I was banging on this thing, no pun intended, so hard I actually got carpal and cubital tunnel in both wrists and elbows. And I had to actually get surgery on both wrists and both elbows, which put me out of the computer game for several months, which was disappointing. Then I started up again. So I would say for about the last 2 years, I've been banging on this hard, really hard, getting it done, to where now, even still, it's only been done a couple weeks. I still don't know how to act in the morning without having to wake up at 5 or 6, get a coffee, and then write or edit or whatever, you know, check sequencing or check alignment of chapters and terms and definitions, you know, for 4 or 5 hours. So I think that if someone sees the table of contents, somebody at Quantico, they would say, yeah, I mean, that's how our program is sequenced out. Or, geez, actually, this might even be better sequenced than ours, you know?
No, I mean, Mike, let me just say, in talking to you now about it, I mean, we don't have a book like this. I think you just wrote it, which is awesome. All right, next question. So if I was 18 or 19 and I saw a 500-page book on leadership and I flip through it and I don't see a lot of pictures in it, I don't know this is for McNamara, right? Talk to me about so some might find it daunting. What do you say to them? What say ye today?
So it's a great question. Very common for today, I would say 30 and younger, especially 25 and younger. They don't want to read anything longer than a text.
Right.
And to them, I say, too bad. The people that want to become world-class leaders, people that want to become world-class at anything, Matt, they're going to put in the 10,000 hours or more, you know? And so the young kid that looks at this book as too thick, don't want to do it, he's either not ready or he doesn't have the discipline, the self-discipline or the focus to read it. And I can't make him read it. What I'm telling him, the first chapter says leadership is a choice. You have to choose to be a leader. No one, you know, we don't in the Marine Corps typically say, well, you are going to be a battalion commander. You know, it's like, well, sir, I don't want to be that. Too bad. You're going to get 3-8 right now. You know, you turn it down, you know. So now there's certainly some guys that get battalions that probably shouldn't have them, but you get my point. What I find in the business world, and I don't think it's any different than the Marine Corps, I think there's young PFCs and Lance Corporals with 18 months of service that look at the gunny and say, I want to be him someday. and I know that's not going to happen through osmosis. I have to learn. And somehow you get those guys there studying and absorbing things at a far different rate than some of their peers whose long-range planning is, you know, what are we doing Friday night? And there's nothing wrong with that either, but there's just different maturity levels. In the business world, I routinely talk to 28-year-olds, 35-year-olds that don't have a clue. Well, maybe I'll get into management someday, maybe not. And I also talk to 25-year-olds that say, no, my dad was an executive or my mother was the VP or whatever the case may be, and I want to lead. I want to be in charge of a department, a division, a company. I want to lead someday. And much like I had to study nights and weekends to pass my CPA exam while my buddies were out partying, I'm quite sure that there's study and off-duty time that I'm going to have to put in to become an exceptional leader. So I'm not going to make anybody read the book. Some people aren't ready to read the book right now. But when you are serious and you want to accelerate your learning and start, you know, outdistancing your peer competitors or the leadership roles that are opening up, you're going to read this book and a whole host of other books, by the way.
You know, in listening to you,
I guess what I'm saying, Mac, is on this one here, you know, the younger generation always wants hacks. They want, hey, go here, you got 5 hacks and you'll circumvent the system. Takes 3 days. If you do these 5 hacks, you get it done in 3 hours. There's no leadership hacks. You're either going to learn this stuff, absorb it, reflect upon it, or you're not. Doesn't mean you're not going to get promoted. Doesn't mean you're not going to be in a leadership role. But I can tell you as an experienced executive coach, most of what I talk to senior clients about is the result of them not having this fundamental level of training as younger leaders. It almost always goes back to what we consider the fundamentals of small unit leadership.
Well, so I want to ask you, I would love for you and I, and we'll get a third, and we can discuss who that is, to do a monthly segment on a section of your book. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, no, I think it would be fascinating to do that. The other thing I'll tell you is in my remarks the other night I did the birthday ball I was a guest speaker for Marine Wing Support Squadron 372 that does all the support for the airfield out at down at Camp Pendleton. And Mike, you and I both, when you've been around the Marine Corps long enough, you can see a good unit just by walking up to it, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can tell by the way people treat each other. You can tell by the way people carry themselves. And I was, you know, blown away. I won't say blown away. I was nothing but impressed. Sergeant Major Riggs, infantry guy, who's our sergeant major, came to my house personally. He didn't invite me to be the guest speaker over the phone. Drove to my house, knocked on my door, and just, you know, and it went from there. Lieutenant Colonel Bedinghoff, who's our CO, was nothing but absolutely fantastic to me over the weekend. The way the Marines conducted themselves was awesome. And so in thinking about what I would say, first of all, I'm all, you know, it's like, okay, do I remember anything anybody said in a birthday ball speech? And I'm going to tell you that I don't. I don't remember a speech that anybody ever gave. So, you know, with that in my head, I thought about, you know, what would I say? What could I say in a relatively short period of time? And I reflected on why I was even invited. And the reason I was invited is I believe I've done good things relative to post-traumatic mental health that are having an impact. I believe that impact is going to go high order in the next 12 months. And I believe that's why I got invited. And then what I told them, which is mirrors some things you just said, one, is that you get one lap around the track. right? You want to live a great life. And if you aspire to live a great life, then you have to travel a path where you follow your passion. Because greatness requires hour and labor and work. But if it's your passion, as leadership is for you, it's not work, right? As it's not for me. What I do, I don't work. I mean, I do what I'm passionate about. And so at the end of my remarks, I just said, so my advice to you, follow your passion and seek greatness. And you just said it there. There is no shortcuts. There is no hack to it. If you want to be great, you'll put in the hours. And in economics, there's an axiom that says you can't push a string, right? And I love it because you can't. All it does is it curls up on you, right? You could only push something that is firm and strong, right? And so if somebody doesn't have the desire to be it, then so be it. And I like that. And let me tell you, in terms of where you pointed the book, in terms of reading level and education level, I know that's something that writers talk about. Where is this pointing at?
I would say, again, it can be the senior executives will read this book and deputize one of their fellow executives to implement this as, okay, we're going to follow this program. This is going to be our leadership philosophy. Let's do it. Middle executives are going to use it to teach and train people in their departments. They're also going to use some of this to tighten up their game so that they can hopefully get promoted to the highest levels in their profession, in their companies. Young leaders are going to read this and learn fundamentals. Some of them they've already learned, so they're going to brush up on some, learn a whole bunch, avoid making easily avoidable mistakes. And aspiring leaders are going to look at this and realize, to what you said, that Mike Etor is saying that unlike being a world-class athlete, where that's largely been determined at birth, at conception, by your genetic makeup and all of that, fast twitch fibers, slow twitch and all of that, Mike Etor is saying that he firmly believes, that anyone with the desire and the commitment can become a world-class leader. Not just a good leader, Mac, not just an adequate leader. Anyone, a quadriplegic, no physical ability, if he's got a mind and communicate and he's got the will, he can learn how to be a world-class leader. And I repeat that to people because the analogy I use is, I'm assuming that you're a good swimmer, Mac, at least a decent swimmer.
Yes, I am.
And did you ever stand next to somebody who was absolutely petrified in the water? And you know that this is a big, strong Marine. He's an inner city kid. He just can't swim. He's afraid of it. He's never been in the water. He's just terrified. Now, this kid will kill you.
No, I mean, and it's an annual ritual, right, when we do swim qual. And, it's moderately entertaining when you see the rocks and the unks, when they have to go off the tower, right? And yet you have the whole company out there and everybody's laughing. I mean, but they're terrified, absolutely terrified.
So for those of us that are comfortable with the water, when I was young, I would be looking at him like, what's your problem? I'm thinking, what a, sissy. I mean, geez, come on. And then I got older and realized, man, this is a tough dude right here. This is a inner city kid, Golden Gloves boxing champion. This guy will knock your head off. This guy is not a sissy. But he is terrified of this. And he's terrified because it scares him, and it scares him because he hasn't been taught. If we could calm him down and teach him the fundamentals first, and get him, first of all, to realize that he's not going to drown. And that if he does A, B, and C, he not only is not going to drown, he's going to float and actually propel himself. And, there's all sorts of stories, Mac, of guys showing up to Navy SEAL training that don't know how to swim. Right. I don't know how they get there, but they, there's been guys, I've read books where they said this kid showed up. In fact, I read a book one time, they talked about two African exchange officers showed up at Bud's. Neither one of them had ever been in the water other than a shower or a bath. They'd never swam in their life. And this is a big problem because, you got to be a frogman here. and they worked with them. These guys had guts. And like midway through the class, they were swimming. By the end of the class, they were hauling ass through the water. And initially, they were terrified of getting in the pool. And they went back to the embassy and said, you know, these guys can't swim. And so long story made sure it worked out for them. Well, it's the same with leadership. Someone can look at me or you or another experienced leader and say, how do you guys, I mean, you guys just seem to know what to do. It's because we've made all those reps, Matt. We've made those mistakes. We still make mistakes. I mean, I still do. I'm a better leader now from having researched and written this book than I was just 3 or 4 years ago. 3 or 4 years ago is better than 10 years prior to that. But my point is, leadership is a learnable skill. And if you're willing to push harder, it's nothing different than being like a tactical leader. Why is Mattis so much more intellectually and tactically and strategically competent and capable than most of his peers? It's because they all had the same amount of schooling, time, individual, off-duty time and all that, and he chose to focus it in certain avenues while others chose other priorities. Leadership's no different. You can become a world-class leader, but you have to study and you have to do practical application. There's no way around that. You have to do the reps. That said, if you read and study books like this and talk to the right kind of people, you can accelerate. You don't have to make the mistakes. You know, if I had this book 30 years ago, Mac, this would have saved me some embarrassment and some problems, you know, because I made some doozies that if I had a couple of these chapters, I'm like, that's pretty good. I was going to do that. I was getting ready to be the wrong kind of famous.
No, but you know, and you hear these things as you're bouncing around the Marine Corps, and they are you know, and I'll throw one out here. You hear, and they tend to be phrases, right? General Mattis famous for that, right? No better friend, no worse enemy. But as you're growing up as a young officer, right, you hear stuff like expect what you inspect. Which is as rich as it gets relative to you want to be good, then you better be taking a look at it. Because if you don't look at it, guess what's not going to happen, right? And so, I mean, and so there were those things, and they're just so rich in leadership success, right? And there are these gold-plated slogans that you hear that if you follow, you know, you know, the kingdom will be yours. I mean, it's so interesting for me to hear you talk because I've gone down the same path relative to not only living a good life with after trauma darkens your doorstep, right, but living a great life, living a life beyond what you know in your life today. Even like if you could unwind it and go back, I'm going to show you how you can live a greater life than that. And anybody can go there. And so the parallels between our leadership kind of paths and exploration is really interesting to me. Tell me, in writing the book, what did you learn? Give me one lesson you learned writing the book that you probably wish you would have known a lot sooner, or maybe was an epiphany for you.
I think I've already touched on it. It was. Instructive for me to have to sit back and roll back the audio and the video, so to speak, Mac, and purge all of the knowledge and say, Mike, this is 1974 when you enlisted. You didn't know anything. And almost immediately you were put in charge of a fire team and then a squad, and you became a very young sergeant, a very young drill instructor. How did you get there, you know? How did you get from zero to 40 pretty quickly, you know? And that's difficult for us to do. I mean, it's difficult for anyone with any kind of expertise and mastery to put themselves in the shoes of the rank novice, the totally untutored, unskilled, but willing an eager novice.
Okay, let me ask you a question. So when you said 0 to 40, you meant 0 bodies to 40 bodies?
0 what?
You meant 0 bodies to 40 bodies, leading that number?
No, I was talking, like, you know, this is a car analogy, 0 to 60. miles an hour or so.
Right.
You know, but yeah, you know, if there is a Marine analogy. How did I go from being a PFC and Lance Corporal with one body, myself, to all of a sudden being in charge of 12 bodies? And then less than 2 years later, being a sergeant, and now I'm the duty drill instructor with 85 bodies, 85 recruits. And I'm supposed to be teaching these guys.
And how many? And how many years?
I was a drill instructor at age 20, and I say that I graduated my first platoon about 3 months before I hit the 3-year mark in the Marine Corps. Okay. I never wore a hash mark as a drill instructor. I got out at EAS. Yeah, I went. There's a couple stories in the book about me being the baby drill instructor of my class, and there's a picture of me as a 20-year-old drill instructor, and I'm standing next to a recruit, and I'm telling you, I mean, he may look older than me. I mean, I really didn't even need to shave every day at that point. I mean, I was a baby, you know. But thrust into the big world of the drill field and all of that. So I like to say that I have a unique background, and I'm living proof that if you're willing and the material's out there and the mentors are out there, that you can really leapfrog and accelerate your learning capabilities, you know, your capacity to lead.
Okay, let me ask you a follow-up question. So when you were young, right, were you a natural leader? Because there's some people that would say, well, you know, a lot of you guys have always been leaders. You were yeah. leaders of the kids you hung out with. You were leaders of athletic teams. You were student body officers. You guys have been doing this. You know, yeah, you just got to the Marine Corps, but you guys have been doing this forever. Were you one of those guys who did it forever?
Yes and no. I think I was born with a certain amount of leadership aptitude. I was the kid when we were playing, you know, sandlot baseball and all that I could pretty much tell them, well, look, why don't we, let's play football today. Hell with baseball. Let's play football. And I, and people would, you know, my young friends would generally follow that, you know? So I do think that, I think leaders are made, not born. That said, much like athletic, you know, musical skills, mathematical aptitude, I do think some people can be born with more leadership aptitude than others. Now, whether they work on that aptitude and leverage it, that remains to be seen. But you'll see a story in the book when you read it, Mac. There was a guy that at K-Force that we let him be a leader. He wanted to be one. And he was getting good mentoring. He failed miserably the first time. And then about a year and a half later, he wanted to try again. We schooled him up, and he failed miserably a second time. And I told his boss, if you ever come to my office recommending that this guy be a leader again, I'm going to punch you in the face. And I said, and if you ever do that, and I agree, I want you to punch me in the face. And sure enough, about 2 years later, he came back and said, Fred, you know, it's a pseudonym. Fred swears he can do it. He's learned a lot. He wants another crack, you know. So we called him and talked to him. This time, he kicked ass. He did great. Did so good that he left his role in our department and went into more of a sales leadership role. Kicked ass in that, and some other company stole him. Today, he is an executive in charge of a huge sales operation, you know, probably $100 million in sales or more, and he's a leader. He's got distant locations and all. And this is a guy that failed his first two times. And I'm telling you, had zero natural ability at leadership. I'm talking zero. And failed miserably. I mean, it was a matter of we remove him from his leadership position, or everybody on his team was going to quit. He just didn't get it. Twice, he did not get it. So,
which reinforces your point that anybody can do it, right?
Yes.
But there is a level of obviously passion that you have to have for it. And if you have that passion, even if you didn't do it, you know, because I was one of those kids that, I mean, I was captain of. Every time we went out to recess, I was the one that said, okay, who wants to be the other captain? Like, oh, Etor, you get second pick. McNamara has first pick. When, you know, we elected, you know, I went to Catholic school. There was structure. We had class officers. There's a president, a vice president, a secretary, blah, blah, blah. You know, who wants to run for president? Oh, well, that should be me. So the people that didn't put their hands up, that didn't say, that's not me, your point to them is?
That if you have a desire to lead and you truly love people and you look around and you see leaders and you say, I want to be like them, or I actually think I can do better than them, take heart. There's every possible leadership mistake you could possibly make in your entire life has already been made thousands of times by other people. And all you have to do is read the right material, study the right books, talk to the right people, and you will discover things, much like Mattis and other students of the operational art did, and say, hey, if left to my own devices, I would have attempted that river crossing the same way, and we would have got stuffed just like the Germans did in World War One, you know, or whatever specific tactic example is. So my voice, this is what I'm reaching out to, these people that don't let anybody define you and say that you can't be a leader. If you want to be a leader and you're willing to study and work hard, you can be a leader. In fact, with time and experience, it comes judgment and wisdom, and you can become a world-class leader. Doesn't mean you have to be in a world-class organization. I say that if you want to be the best squad leader in a fire department, this book's for you. If you want to be the best deli manager, this book's for you. If you want to be a Fortune 100 executive someday, this book is for you, because the only way you're going to get to the executive level is to be a really good supervisor, then a manager, then a, you know, a director. You get my point.
This book's for
anyone, whether they're in charge of one other person or a million other people. This book is for them.
Mike Etor has been my guest for the last hour. The book is called Trust-Based Leadership. You can find it on Amazon.com. Mike, so let me ask you the general question, which corresponds to the general article. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you about your book over the course of the last hour that you want to make sure that people will know?
I think you've pretty much hit it all, Mac, and I know that I'm staring at my computer screen right now. It's full of spit. You know, I get impassioned about this. You know, I got the veins in my neck. I mean, I love this stuff. I love helping leaders. There's actually a picture of me in there with some quotes and all of that. And that's I literally tell people, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. The rest of my life is devoted to helping people develop as leaders. And so obviously I'm a big fan of leadership. And I'm a big fan of this book. It's a good book. And so I would urge all of your readers, Mike Etor is telling you, go to Amazon, buy this book. And if you get it and you don't find value in it, I think Amazon will let you return it in 30 days. So you have no risk. I'm not looking to make money on this book. If someone will buy me lunch, I'll talk to them. I'll give them all this for free. But that's logistically impossible to talk to all the masses and all that. But I would say, especially for those veterans out there that are in the business world and your people are listening to you, this is going to be a great training aid for you. And you're going to realize that a lot of what's written down is what you already know, but this saves you the trouble of writing it down. And it also gives you something to put in other people's hands so you can say, hey, next Friday we're going to have a lunch and learn for an hour and a half, and we're going to talk about chapters 15 through 18. So everybody read them. You got 7 days. Next Friday we're all going to talk about this. This is a great book for that. This is what they're doing. And again, I would urge people to buy it, and if you don't like it, return it. No skin off my back or anything like that, but if, I believe if I can get it in people's hands who want to be better leaders or who want to find something, some kind of structure and format to train leaders, this is it. So, by the way, I sent you three, Mac. The other two are for your sons. This is the book you want to give your sons as they transition out of the Marine Corps into the business world. This is, tells, I think one of your sons already out there. This will show him, you know, I do know this, and yet this guy is 20 years ahead of me in adapting and evolving and applying these concepts that I already know well for the business world. It worked out great for him, and I can learn from some of his successes and mistakes.
Mike, first of all, thank you for sending three, and I will send them on their way. I just want to, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, I'm in Yuma right now, and I'll speak to all of Mag 13 tomorrow. I'll do my 3-hour presentation 4 times tomorrow, and what I want to say is so many Marines get out and they're a little bit intimidated by the civilian world. And just looking at your book and thinking of the possibilities, if you could send them home and say, okay, let me just tell you, you know, I come from a great organization, right? And I want to talk to you about leaders eating last, okay? I want to talk to you about that concept. So tonight I want you to go home and just read, you know, chapter 17, right? And then tomorrow we're going to have probably about a 30-minute discussion about it. What a great device to put in the hands of anybody to teach these, you know, these things that those of us who have served in this organization who've been the beneficiaries of just, I don't care if it's, you know, great corporals we work with, or, you know, great general officers we work with, or great sergeant majors and first sergeants, but you get these pearls of wisdom, and you've taken them, and you've really jammed them into, in my opinion, a great book. But if you're in the business now of influencing an organization, I agree with it. You have a guide right here. You have a guide, and what you can do with it is you have a guide to take groups there. Right, and that's what you have to do. You got to be able to influence the group to take the institution to a different place. And if you can elevate without spending an additional dime, other than investing in this book, you can elevate, right, the leadership across an organization simply through those leadership discussions, and you will affect your bottom line. You will affect longevity. You will affect retainment. All these things are force multipliers in business. And look, and again, we don't have this in the Marine Corps, for God's sakes. So, and if you're a Marine, I would tell you, absolutely buy it. Here's your outline for your PMEs for the next 600 years, man.
Yeah, true.
No, I mean, congratulations. I think it's, in thinking about it, it's like, God, we don't have a book like that.
Marines are going to like this book.
Oh, man.
Because it's going to help them be better Marine leaders. Marines and veterans who are transitioning will like this book because they'll be able to look at me, and I'm talking to the smart-ass, shit-hot F-18 pilots, you know, soft guys and all of that, that are looking at me saying, you know, this guy was a pea-brain grunt, but I did well. And it's all verifiable on Google. When you're an executive in a publicly traded company, it's all out there, the money they pay you and all of that. And I am telling you that the only thing that made me successful as a business executive really quickly was that I was an experienced leader. I led civilians in almost identical fashion that I led U.S. Marines. Interpersonal skills, traits and principles, just the fundamentals. And they, in turn, taught me the nuances of business, which enabled me to become a better leader for them. But I still don't know a thimble full of technology, but yet I was a, no kidding, CIO of a technical group with 176 people in it, pulling off large software implementations. And I obviously had no technical value to ADMAC. It was leadership. If you talk to the members of that group when I took over, they were naturally apprehensive, if not frightened, that I was in charge. But they will tell you now it worked out great because he brought what he said he would bring. All I have to offer is leadership and organizational skills. And if you'll give me a chance, I think we can help each other. And that department went from the clear worst in the company to the very best support unit. And even more gratifying, several of my leaders from that department are now senior executives at a level much higher than I ever got. And they weren't there when I first got to them, and they were willing students of leadership. They didn't have to learn anything more technically, Mac, but they became leaders. And to see these guys out there now kicking ass as senior leaders, doing well, helping people's lives, making a ton of money, that's the best payoff I've ever gotten. You know, to and I know you're the same way, to see someone succeed in the Marine Corps that you might have had an influence on as a TBS instructor. And it's the same out here in the business world. So I know I'm a very upbeat person, kind of evangelist type. I'm just telling, hey, Sergeant Gunny, don't go to work at the lumberyard when you retire EAS. Don't think, well, I can't. Go work there, get a foot in, and I'm telling you, within a matter of months, you're going to be running that lumberyard. And if you go in with that attitude, not only are you going to be running it, they're going to pay you to run it. Because they're going to say, this is the best this lumberyard has ever run in the existence of it, and we're going to make sure that you're happy and nobody steals you and you have no reason to quit on us. So it's even more of a meritocracy and a very, very lucrative meritocracy out here in the business world for leaders, leaders, proven leaders. And so I know I'm preaching to the choir. My screen is really full of spit right now.
No, right. I mean, not like it's what I love. I mean, it's our culture and what you've written is allows us to export our culture. And I mean, that's what I do relative to trauma, you know.
And, you know what I'd like to do, Mac? I'll offer you this. If I know people are out there listening, if I don't want to dominate your show or tell you what to do, but
sure.
If you'll allow a certain number of people to contact you, I will send them a free digital copy. They can read the book, and then we can have another session where they can say, Mike, I read it, and I got a question on chapter 13 or chapter 32 or something like that. And I think it would be instructive for them. But, of course, you have a huge audience, and the best, you know, people are not going to believe me. It's my baby. I say it's a beautiful baby. You need to buy it. You need to learn from it. It's going to help you. The real validator is when someone I don't know picks it up and says, no kidding, this is really good. Right. This helps me. This is what I need for my department or whatever the case may be. Those are the endorsements that I need. I'm not in it for profit. I'm in it to spread the word. I've already given away. I had a guy, I was shipping one at UPS yesterday, and a guy looked at it and said, is that you? I said, yes. He was so interested, and I went out in my truck and got him a book and gave it to him for free. I don't even know his name. He said, well, don't you want me to pay? I said, no. I said, he said he was an executive at a bank, and he was very impressed with the book, you know, just from me looking at it. So I went out in the truck and gave him the free copy. But you never know what that's going to do, Mac. That guy may be enlightened by something and I may have just made somebody's life easier because something clicks in the book and makes that leader a little bit more attuned to the human element or whatever the case may be.
Is there a better feeling? Is there a better feeling in the world than that for somebody who teaches leadership?
No, not at all. You know, Peter Drucker, I know you've heard of him, Mac.
Right.
He's written a ton of books. 97% of which were after the age of 60. I didn't know that until about 2 years ago. So that gave me a sense of purpose. And I remember telling myself one day, this sounds a little bit vain, I think I'm a good leader, but I believe myself to be an outstanding developer of leaders. I love doing it. And maybe it's vanity, but I wanted to write this book, and I've got more coming, so that when I finally seize up and take the dirt nap, that I take that everything that's in my brain, all of my experiences and all that has been recorded on paper or digital, and it just might help my great-grandson or great-granddaughter someday, whether she gets a good boss because he's read some of this stuff. But you get my picture.
Yeah.
I urge everybody to consider that, you know, we're not going to live forever, and I feel real good about this book right now. If they told me, Mike, we got bad news, you're sick and you're going soon, you're only going to get a certain amount of time to write one book on leadership and kind of, you know, regurgitate some things and throw your stuff out there, I did it. Thank God I did it. It's out there, Max. So I still look at it. I'm like, my God, Mike, it's done. It's done, you know?
No.
So I feel great about it. And I'll feel even better if I know that a bunch of people have read it and gleaned just one nugget. You never know when that million-dollar nugget, so to speak, is going to hit somebody in the head and ring their bell, and who knows where they're going to be 30 years from now.
Okay, how many digital books do you want to give away?
Any suggestions? I mean, I'll give away as many as you want. Maybe give 25 away, 50 away.
All right. So we'll put the number at 25. So all you're going to do is shoot me an email. All right. Shoot me an email.
Yeah, it'll be a digital PDF, a PDF, and obviously I have special trust and confidence. I'm just telling anybody that contacts Mac and wants one of these free PDFs, I'm trusting you because, yes, you can take this PDF and shotgun it out to 3,000 of your friends, and they've now got a free book. So I trust you. I don't know you, but I trust you, and I just want to spread the word of leadership. So enough said.
All right. His name is Mike Etor. His company is called Fidelis Leadership Group. The book is entitled Trust-Based Leadership, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. You can find it right now on Amazon, and at some point it'll transition to other platforms. Mike, we'll give away those 25 books. And as always, I mean, when we do this, I can't do it often enough, and I can't do it long enough. So thank you very much for your time, and wish you all the best with your book. And I'm can't tell you how impressed I am with the work. As I said, when I picked it up, I reached in, and I thought you had sent me, you know, a dozen copies of your book. There were 3 volumes of the book in there, right? And I thought, wow. Wow, this thing.
Well, you know, I'm always thinking about multi-purposing, Max. So this thing, now that you're holding it, I say if you soak it in water and plaster, you can make a sappy plate out of it. And it's big enough to be a field expedient base plate for a 60-mic mortar.
You know what? That's well done.
Or it can be used, you know, it can be used for ballast in your bass boat or whatever the case may be, you know?
No, let me just tell you, in reading it, right, the parts that I've read, what I like about it is that it's direct, okay? It is not flowery, roundabout prose. You know, it is what I've loved about the style of our culture, and it is direct. And again, my gunny walking up to me saying, you know, you're never going to get over this. He didn't sit down with me and tell me a 20-minute story about that. He looked me straight in the face, and your book is written in the same way. It is simple. It is pointed. It's direct. I like it.
No, you're onto something there. You know, some people that know me say, Mike, you know, you write like you speak. I don't know whether that's a good or a bad comment from them.
That's good.
But I actually sent a copy. I sent 2 copies to a friend at Camp Lejeune, a retired colonel. And I said, hey, give the second copy to Colonel Schmuckatelli. I'm not going to say his real name. And Colonel Schmuckatelli is a great guy, incredibly intelligent guy, Ivy League education. And he knows me from way back as a knuckle-dragging lieutenant when I was one. And he said, and I told him, I said, tell Colonel Schmuckatelli that this is Mike Etor's proof that a phys ed major, 03, knuckle dragger, can actually string together three or four paragraphs in a coherent way. And he said, I'll relay that message. So I'm sure the Ivy League grad is laughing. When he first met me, if he looked at this book, he would say, I don't think this guy's actually capable of doing that.
Mike Etor here on All Marine Radio. Don't touch that dial. More of this program coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I could do that with Mike Etor all day. Honestly, I mean, I said it on the program, but I heard about Mike Etor before I met him, and I just had heard what a great guy he is, and he is every bit that guy. And you can, I always love the self-deprecating humor, and just the subject of leadership in general. And I find it very, very interesting. He and I travel the same paths in different orbits, right? And so it's just been a great experience. And I can't tell you how excited I am to on a monthly basis do installments about a book and bring other people on, and kind of mix it up a little bit. So I'll tell you what, the book is, it's like, I was like I told you, when I opened the box, I thought he had sent me about six copies of the book. There's three in there, right? It's a 600-page book. And, 4 years to write. And so hats off to Mike. Hats off to Mike. And again, the book I want to write is not a long book, right? The book I want to write is simple. But it's the same genre, the plain-spoken truth of the culture of Marines. Again, not the culture of the Marine Corps, the culture of Marines. And the way they hand down things to each other, which I was a recipient of. And that's what Mike has done. Mike has done that relative to a much broader topic, which is leadership. And you should see it. The thing's ginormous. But again, and just as you hear Mike talk, it is in this plain-spoken, direct language, I think, of the Marine Corps that has made Marine Corps leadership work for so long. Anyway, don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues. If you are just tuning in, the first hour, I get a little pissed off because, evidently, drug dealers and human traffickers, they have rights, right? You can't call them out of a formation and arrest them. And you know what? I don't care. First of all, I just want to say to the battalion commander, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, Lieutenant Colonel Eric Olson, good on you, man. You did the right thing. Do it in front of everybody, and I don't give a shit what any judge says, right? Fuck that judge. Yeah. Good order and discipline trumps all else. And Marines got to see that shit. And if their feelings got hurt, too fucking bad. Right? The UCMJ is not about everybody's rights. It's about being able to locate, close with, and destroy the Chinese at some point in the future. And everything that contributes to you being softer and less efficient costs you human lives at the point of impact. And to the people that don't understand that, go the fuck away. So on that cheery note, have a great day. Tuesday, All Marine Radio continues, but the live portion is over and out.